Blog Talk Radio.
Coming up or what? But yes, it's Friday already. So, and just for the record, I want to tell everybody I added another book to our topic board for the book releases for our LNP members. Anybody who's interested in having the book put on this page, or this topic board, I don't want to call it a page, send me a message, private message me on All Poetry. And I'll be happy to put the book cover and a link to purchase on that. So, that's blessed. What's new with you, Rex? How's the weather?
Oh, more rain. Now it's a little on the chilly side.
Oh, God, more rain? Yuck.
Yeah,
and dampness. Oh, God, cold and damp, I can't stand. That just totally, like, I don't know. It gets in my bones. I can't do that too much. Well, I don't do grumpy weather.
It does seep in the old bones and make them hurt.
You saying I got old bones, Rex? Watch it now, Buster. Watch it.
Well, no.
Watch it. I heard that.
My one knee's been plaguing me the last 2 days.
Your one knee? Oh, God, I bet. I know. I know when it gets damp around here, boy, I'll tell you, the legs get kind of stiff. The arms get kind of stiff. The damn shoulder that I broke, 4 years ago? That sucker gets stiff. I'm like, wow. I tell you, I should be standing straight with the way I feel. But, yeah, it's no fun. So I totally get it. I do. I'm just busting your chops about the old thing. I don't really care. I worked hard to get here to 60. I did. And I made it. And I made it alive. That's impressive right there. There were days I wasn't so sure it was going to happen.
Well, as Jim says, no one here gets out alive.
Ain't that the truth? Ain't that the truth? No. So, yeah, it's been a quiet week only because, like, I've been sleeping all week. Eventually I'll get my act together and I won't be so tired. Not sure. I might have to start, I don't know, intravenous coffee. Maybe I'll start taking energy drinks. I see me taking energy drinks, Christ, my whole system would implode. Like, what the hell is she doing to us now? But, I don't know. But I figure eventually I'll get back on it. Oh, God, I can't sleep forever, right? Well, I could, but they don't call that living anymore. Being awake and being up and sleepy all the time is sure beats the alternative. So, and that being said, it's not looking so bad anymore. But just so you know, we have two callers. We have
all bones and all.
There you go, that old word again. Watch it, Rex. I'm telling you, I'm listening. Hi,
oh,
dude.
No, that's my name put in the chat.
Oh, God, she's talking old bones. Watch it, Naomi, now. Oh, my God. Okay, I heard it. I saw it. You're all in trouble now. But welcome aboard. It's good to have you on a Friday. And I'm not sure who else we have, so let me just call and check it out. Hello, 760. Who's calling, please?
Regine, it's Scott.
Scott!
Hello, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
Wow.
I know, it's been a long time. And every time I've tried to call recently, I've either had people stop by unexpected or other people are in the room where I would normally do it. So, tonight I have some peace and quiet.
You just tell them, fill my eyes and get the hell out of here. I got things to do. That's all. They'd be like, who? Never mind. It's all good. I've been in trouble for worse. Anyway, hon, it's good to have you here. Absolutely.
I am looking forward to it.
Oh, good. We're always happy to have a friendly voice. So life is good.
I still listen. I just don't get to talk to you guys. So
yeah, but you've been sending in some good SoundClouds. I like it. I like it. I like it.
Oh, thank you.
Mhm. It's always a treat. I'm trying to think. What else is new? Well, I don't know. I can't really come up with much. I have the book topic board I put up to share. As a reminder to everybody, please be sure to use the reading list to post your poetry. Not the topic boards, not the chat room. It just keeps things a little more streamlined. Everybody knows where to go to find stuff. You're putting up topic boards just gets me lost because then I can't find my own topic board for the night. And I'm not sure. I'm sure I'm not the only one. But anyway, I'm a stickler for that stuff. Anyhow, life is good. Life is good. Spring is coming. We went through how many seasons of the Game of Thrones? Winter is coming. Now, see, this is my show. Spring is coming. It is. It really is. Trust me. Don't all sound so excited about it. I can't stand it. Anyway, I'll be good now. Yeah, I want to, I guess I'll kick this show off and give Rex something to do. So Rex, I'm going to put up a piece by Daniel Buscino. And whenever you're ready.
This is called O Child, Dance Free by Daniel Buscino. When ground hardens legs and weathered mind succumbs to earthly time, smothered breath, I lose myself in childhood dancing. Oh, the joys of youth and playful days of dance and song in simple ways. No prince did I need to rescue me. My feet would fly and set me free. How magic was my dance when young, a song my heart has always sung in poem. And Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, yeah, I just love this. When ground hardens and weather's not, and oh, my gracious. I was going to start that over again. When ground hardens legs and weathered mind succumbs to earthly time, smothered breath, I lose myself in childhood dance. What a way to start out a poem. You know, what lovely metaphors for, you know, it hardened, you know, when the ground hardens, you know, for life, the hardships of life there. And, you know, the things that are not so great happening in your life. A wonderful metaphor there. And, you know, this is just a joy all the way through. It says a nice message, you know, a beautiful message throughout this. No prince did I need to rescue me. My feet would fly and set me free. You know, just the love of dance. You can feel it in this poem. My son was a dancer, and you know, he had a great, great passion for it. So, yeah, I can relate to this poem a lot. Just to see him on stage there was wonderful. So amazing, right here by Daniel Buscino for sure.
Nice, thank you, Naomi. And Scott, how about you?
I really like this. Quite honestly, when I read it just before the show started and everything, kind of read it out loud because literally it's kind of like your tongue is dancing as you read this poem. It is really well written. And it literally has a sense of dance through the poem itself. So, yeah, I'm really impressed. Very well written.
All right. Thank you, Scott. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, when I first read this poem, that would be the way to say it, I thought that it was really well done, and I thought it was a great, his word choices really fit the prompt. So, you know, I really felt that he captured the true tone of the image. So, excellent job, Dan, and thank you for sharing with us, as always. Now, we also have another topic. So let me see who this is. Hello, area code 239. Who's calling, please?
Hi, this is Bill Schiller.
Hey, Bill.
Hello,
how
Bill.
Are you tonight?
How are you doing? I'm great. Thank you.
Awesome. Awesome thoughts. That's wonderful.
And I really enjoyed that Buscino poem, too. That was a very good meter all from the beginning to the end. This was kind of like a dance because it had its own rhythm.
Awesome. Very cool. Very cool, very cool, very cool. Okay. Well, let me get the next piece because, you know, otherwise Rex is going to ask me and then I won't be ready. You know, I got to pay attention. Oh, yes. I need a story in my life because I'm too poor to even pay attention. Anyway, Scott, can I get you to read the next piece for us? That would be wonderful. And this is
sure.
Remember Me Too by Average White Man.
Have you posted it in the...
I did. I just posted it.
Okay, there we go. All right, very good. Remember Me Too by Average White Man. We loved wildly, did we not? Like a storm tossed autumn tide, whilst the moonlight cast its dreamy light so brilliantly. White horses without restraint on the shore of the black Irish Sea. Do you remember me plucking at the strings of your dreams, leaving you breathless and flushed with the glow of radiating love? I remember you and all the things that you said, your doe-eyed expressions of desire and longing for any moment to hold on to and never let me go. No one brought forth the torrents quite like you, this diamond among coal, so beguiling to my soul. Who is this beloved woman who loved me at great cost? Who brought me down here? Who brought me to this loss? Those moments that once brought me joy, your smile that dried the rain, now bring me in relentless waves, the greatest of gnawing pain. End poem.
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much. And Bill, why don't we start with you, please?
Oh, hi. Yes, that was a wonderful read, by the way. And it was, to me, it felt like restrained intimacy with awesome accents, not just the rhyming. I like rhyming, but you know, the accents, which is this playoff of sounds throughout the piece, I really like, because I think it helps make it more compelling and roll off the tongue. And you know, the air picks up on those repetitive things. So that and the richness of metaphor and, you know, with the horses and wild horses, and you know, I can certainly tell this was quite the tumultuous interaction between these two. You know, it was romantic, but like I said, restrained. I mean, some of the illusions were restrained, but you still catch the imagery. And you clearly know what's going on between these two. And you can feel it. So I thought this was wonderful.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought this was an excellent write. Very well expressed. I love this lead into the whole piece. We loved wildly, did we not? Like a storm tossed autumn tide, whilst the moonlight cast its dreamy light so brilliantly. White horses without restraint on the shore of the black Irish Sea. Do you remember me plucking at the strings of your dreams? I love the way he led into that. I probably could have picked up another line or two and just sat here with a big smile on my face. But I really thought it was very well written and very well done. And it definitely, and the ending of it, you know, of course, is things didn't end well, you know. And it was very sad, you know. You know, your smile that dried the rain, now bring me in relentless waves, the greatest of gnawing pain. You know, very sad ending. You know, borderline painful, I have to say that, you know, for the reader. And I think that even with that being said, I think there's a lot of beauty in this piece in the beginning. And, you know, just the way it was worded out and everything. So, excellent job, Average White Man. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Jean. And Scott, how about you? You got to read it.
I really like this. I kind of like some of the syntactical choices, like word order, that kind of makes it feel like the waves are crashing onto the shore in a way. We loved wildly, did we not? Like a storm-tossed autumn tide. You know, I just, the way that rolls off your tongue, it almost feels like the crashing of the waves. And then, whilst the moonlight cast its dreamy light so brilliantly. And then I really do love the contrast of the white and the black in the next two lines. White horses without restraint on the shore of the Black Irish Sea. Just very musical and really awesome. And then I do like the turn, like Gene was saying, is so much of it is a pleasant recalling of a great memory, but then in the end, there's the pain of loss that you feel in it. So it's a really cool poem. I like it quite a bit. So very good job. I'm going to say he's above average white man.
Nice play there. And Naomi, since you're giggling up a goodie, how about you?
Yeah, me too. I just liked the opening. You know, those lines that Gene recited there, they just, you know, what a wonderful metaphors for the whole relationship. You know, we loved wildly, did we not? You know, they loved like as if they were caught in a storm. And, you know, when she appeared, you know, she was like the light so brilliantly, or the time that the relationship was really working well was like a dreamy light there, and, you know, without restraint. But then, you know, on the shore of the Black Irish Sea, black comes in there at the end for sure. So, I just loved how he opened it up with that metaphor, which represents well the whole unfolding of that relationship right there. And, you know, all through the questions also that he brought up throughout the poem, I thought, you know, that was really brilliant. You know, it kept our attention, kept us captivated. So great write here.
Great comments, everybody. And I agree with you, the illusions that he rolled with us from the picture itself into the tide of the relationship. It's highs, it's lows, and how it works. And that thought of the bittersweet, but yet he offers up that note in the end. Now bring me in relentless waves the greatest of gnawing pain. That touch of angst which sits well within the mind and gives one the note of walking back in time just to remember those moments. And hold them dear to heart and mind. So great job there, Average. Thank you very much. All right, Gene. We're coming back to you.
Well, I have another caller. And let me see. Hello, 347. You said your name is John?
Yes.
Are you on
good
all
evening.
Poetry, John?
Yes, I am, ma'am, yeah.
Okay. And your name on all poetry one more time? I'm sorry.
Is John Lars Zwerens. It's actually an English name, my surname. You know, John's easy enough. I've been writing poetry since high school and before. I think it's important for us to acknowledge why we write poetry and why we should, and what's the real modus operandi for writing verse. And I think it's an act of oblation for other people. We're called to serve our readers, you know.
I have to ask you, John. Did you hear the poem that we just read?
Yeah,
because right now
I did.
That's the way we do the shows. We read the poem and we comment on the poem, and we kind of move on. We do a little banner throughout, but
right.
Just so you know, we don't.
Right. I thought it was rich and colorful. It was indicative of a lot of the things I've been reading that's out there now. It could have been more concise, maybe. Poetry's taken a strange turn, and it's kind of, this poem was good. I enjoyed it. But there's a lot of, poetry is a vocation, and I think that there's too many people writing things that it's not necessary, and it's not really helping society to be overcome by a tremendous amount of literature. That's not really quality.
There's One man's trash is another man's treasure. I think that the poetry we put out every night is wonderful. I think.
Yeah, you guys. I'm not too familiar with your show, but yeah, I would say that poem was good.
That everybody has a valid reason for writing, whether they're a cathartic person, it's an expression of what they feel inside to another. So, you know, there's no too much poetry. People have reasons for writing, and it's whatever suits them. And it's not for us to judge or to ask. So that's the way I feel about that. And, you know, if there's nothing in that poem you can find to like, I feel sorry for you because there was a lot in that poem to like.
Oh, no, no. From what I heard of it, I liked it all, actually. You know,
we're here on this team and this group are all about reading the poem and coming up with what we can find that's positive in the poem. Not everybody's poetry is wonderful, but there's always something in every poem that someone can like.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's kind of what I'm saying.
But I'm just saying, we're not here for the soapbox about, oh, too many people writing poetry or any of that. We're here to you know, read the poems, share people's work, you know, let other people hear it, direct people to read their work, and that's what we're about. You know, about
right. Well, yeah, that's good. That's good. Those are good virtues. I'm just saying, I'm not worried about it because the cream kind of comes to the top anyway. The best poets sooner or later are recognized for their work. And people who are more inclined to mechanics and working at McDonald's or being politicians and who don't really have talent in the area of writing poetry, you know, that stuff doesn't last. But that's kind of the point I'm making.
It sounds like that's the point you're making.
Yeah, I just wrote a sonnet today.
By the way, you would be pretty good at filtering through the plethora of stuff that you have to choose from, because I know you have literally dozens and dozens of things that come your way, and I'm really impressed with how you somehow sort through all that. And I think you all do a great job of selecting the pieces you want to read. And,
Thank you.
Yeah, I think people do, too, have all kinds of reasons for writing.
Right.
And the reasons don't matter so often as much as just as long as you're doing it. Just write.
Well, I had a lot of dark, depressive times growing up. And the greatest poets in the from the ages, like the French symbolists, like Paul Verlaine, Baudelaire, Rimbaud, really got me through some hard times. And so that's how I envision, you know, why I write poetry now. And a lot of my poetry is being taught in universities across the country. And I just hope I can help. If I can help just one person, it'll all be worth it to get through a dark night when things get dark in your mind and your heart's hurting and you're thinking of ending it. I mean, a poem, a really good poem, can get you through those moments. And I think that's the meaning of poetry, is to help each other.
Sometimes I can barely help myself. I don't know how I'm going to help anyone else.
Okay.
But, I hear your point. One of the things that I harp on sometimes. I noticed that after I published my first couple of books, there would be these people who would come up to me and say, hey, I'm thinking about being a writer, or I have this idea for a book that I want to write, and they would tell me these things. And I'm like, you want to be a writer. Either you are or you're not.
That's exactly how I think. I think it's more of a calling than a choice.
I was writing long before anyone paid me to do it.
Right.
And even if I never got another job getting paid for it, I would still be doing it.
Uh-huh.
And I think poetry has helped me to continue.
Good. That's good. That's good. I wouldn't write a thing if I thought no one would be reading it, you know. If I thought no one would read my poetry,
listen,
I wouldn't write.
I got to cut you guys short. Because this is not what the kind of show is we're running tonight. We're not running, a poetry show.
I think you guys are good. Keep going at it. Keep going at what you're doing, and you're serving a lot of people, and you make a lot of people happy. So keep going.
There you go. There you go. I think we'll do that.
I'm sorry.
It's called Danger by Weezer.
Yeah. Yes.
Thanks, Naomi.
Yeah. There's no SoundCloud. Oh, Weaver of Dreams without a SoundCloud. There you have it. Okay.
<Yeah. laughs>
So this is Danger by Weaver of Dreams. When I'm not whipping and torturing the shell, I procured that I might blend in with ease, await my return. I can enter into it again seamlessly. A little wiggle, lock, look, you can barely see the join. Within the other, the lilac, the teal mist encloses those who astral travel, who overstretch the silver cord that anchors a soul, lest they entered limbo. If caught in those echoless caverns, they slip away. I noticed when I slide back into my borrowed persona, all is not balanced. What should hum in harmony holds a discordant note. Then I sense a demon slipped swiftly away, leaving a deadly stench of misery and despair. I have once found the oracles dislike my dalliance within the ether. Within the ether? Whilst I believe there can be no harm in learning the weaknesses of those souls we wish to garner, it seems we demons are not allowed to interfere. End poem.
Wow.
Great.
Now, that was a great write. That was a great write. It's a romanticizing the Garden of Eden, I think, is what the poet's doing now.
Well, done.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Rex runs the comments. I'm sure he'll be with you shortly.
Okay.
Scott, why don't we start with you, please?
All right. Yeah, as usual, this is really well done. Weaver is always amazing. And, she's got a lot of really good things about it. One thing I really do like is the choice of line break where, you know, like she, in her second and third line, I like how procured and returned kind of have an off rhyme at the beginning of a line. So when I'm not whipping and torturing the shell I procured, that I might blend in with ease awaits my return and stuff. I don't know. There's a musical sense to the way she words things and stuff in throughout it and stuff like that. But as I wrote to her, you know, I do like the idea of the danger of sliding into a life of sort of wrongdoing and, you know, the idea of being in limbo or, you know, between two existences of sorts. And so anyways, I just love the way she put the whole thing together. It's got a great musical sense to it, as it always does with her. And so overall, just a really good job.
Excellent. Thank you, Scott. Jean, how about you?
Hang on. I had myself muted. I thought this was, as always, you know, a great rate by our girl Weaver. I really enjoyed the thoughts on the astral travel, you know. I like the second stanza. I pulled that one out, and I said, yeah. Within the ether, the lilac and teal mist encloses those who astral travel, who overstretched the silver cord that anchors a soul, lest they entered limbo. If caught in those echoless caverns, they slip away. I just thought that she worded all this very well. I thought it was really nicely expressed. You know, the image itself, I'm assuming that's where some of the colors came from that picture. But I think that she tied them together nicely. You know, as for the danger, it's like, well, you know, maybe I'm not coming back, I guess. And with that being said, I think that it's just another great write by Kate. So Well done, honey. Keep up the good work, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. And John, how about you?
I thought that was an exceptionally well-written piece. From the beginning, I kind of knew it was about Eden, the Garden of Eden, what happened there with Eve and the snake. It was almost glorifying some of the evil that happened there, which is a kind of original way to see it through that prism, you know what I mean, through doctrinal religion. It's always seen as evil is evil. And at one point in that poem, she says something about the rights of demons, and like they don't have enough freedom or something. I'm paraphrasing. And actually, they are kept on a very short leash, I believe, and thankfully so. I wouldn't want to give them any more power or freedom, but it was like walking through Eden in a more innocuous way. I think that's how the poem read to me. And she used very good specific imagery and the writing and the stanzas. It was metrically sound, and I think the rhyme schemes were good. Hinted at anyway. It wasn't total verse. It was a great poem. Great poem. And I'm grateful to have heard it.
Excellent. Thank you very much, John. And Bill,
welcome.
How about you? Oh. Bill, you there?
Yes.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about I don't have I wish I could read these along with you as you're reading them, because I'm just going by memory now, which I can't trust at this stage of life. But I know what jumped out at me was that I've read some of this work from, what are their names, Weaver? They never disappoint. Weaver doesn't.
Bill, you can't see the room? You can't see the message board in the room?
Oh, well, let me try that and see what happens.
That's where I'm posting.
I'm going to put down the phone and see what I see.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Bill. Gene, we're coming back on you.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess I'm not. What I'm looking at is the Blog Talk Radio, I guess it's a home page, and I don't see a board on there.
No, we have it on the Late Night Poets board in Late Night Poets, or in World Poetry. You know, so,
okay. Okay. Aaron, well, Bill, one moment or two. I don't want to take all your time, me trying to
that's
find
okay, something. That's okay, because I'm going to pick up next,
one of the things I noted about that poem, which kind of struck me as a bit of incongruency, because the poem is called Danger, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
And the only thing that struck me as a little odd, when I think of colors like lilac, silver, and some of those kind of references, to me that's just the opposite of danger. There's a lightness and safety in the kind of pleasantness of lilac and sparkliness of silver. And I could hear the intimations of danger, somehow something being alluded to and building up to that, but sometimes the kind of the colors, though beautiful, are may reflect a shade different than what you're shooting for. I mean, it doesn't detract from the writing at all, because and so you know this is just this is something that my little brain fixes on that relevant in the grand scheme of things. It just seemed a little incongruent to me, some of those color choices.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful. It seems antithetical to the theme. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thanks, Bill, for the comment. I'm going to put your poem up next, Bill. Rain's Wickedness. So if you'd be so kind as to read that for us, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm going to pull that up right now. Just a moment.
We'll keep it.
Okay, I'm all set. Here we go. And I should maybe just preface this real fast unless I get more hate messages. I live near a community called Sanibel Island, and it has one of the most amazing arrays of avian splendor that can be found in America. So I just preface that because I actually do like birds. Whatever someone may take away from this bit of writing, and so here's how this goes. It's called Winged Wickedness. See them happily sail among airstreams, beyond the pale of my melancholy window screens, with squawks that mock my morose mood. Most regard them as gorgeous, but truth of their nature has been misconstrued. They're more truly hovering harbingers. Taking to flight is an insulting slight to others incapable of joining them amid the air. Those birds, the damnable birds, with their biting beaks, clawed feet, and feathery skin that spurs one feel so wretchedly perturbed. A flock of fiends for Hitchcock, feathered foe to Edgar Poe, their author inspirations, not really so absurd, for those who've experienced the avian agony prompted by birds. They're taunting with laughter in trees just beyond my front door. These birds, the cretinous birds, those egg-laying horrors of hell, tormentors to cats, bullies to frogs, worms, and, well, let me just say, I'm going to scroll this down a moment. I eat one on Thanksgiving, no remorse for main course that comes. Never deny bludgeoning that blackens their beady eyes. When I see birds in the sky, I must go hide. No matter where I drive, whether near or far, their filth still falls like rain on my freshly cleaned car. At home, I wipe windows clean, pray as Joseph, a manger scene. I hope there's no detection before they crash into the reflection. Some say I'm mean, but it's all for my protection from the birds, the freakish birds. They're only good to choose. I hate their revolting nastiness inflicted on Rome statues. Fools, no, idiots like Audubon could only depict feigned innocence, oblivious to insolence and the chirps that chide. For those derided by sadness can hear the madness in their songs, gloating in their happy whistles to obfuscate their wrongs. The horrible songs of birds, those miscreant creatures of sky, with daintiness that helps disguise the plumage of their lies. Regardless of measure or manner, multicolored breasts may sing, if I could only rush into their nest, I'd crush their wicked wings. Now, don't get
great
me wrong.
Read,
I love birds.
Thank you very much. Naomi, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, if my mother heard you say this poem, oh my gracious, she has bird feeders all over her yard. She just loves her birds. if she ever heard you want to rush into a nest and crush a poor bird, she'd get out the fly swatter and get after you. But she does have, you know, this pigeon that hangs around the yard, and he eats all the other little birds' food, so she gets mad at the pigeon. But yeah, you know, this I liked really parts of this. Your reference there to Hitchcock, to Edgar Allan Poe in the poem, and you know, the passion with which you read the whole thing was just you know, captivating. Boy, you really hate these birds, don't you? great, right.
I've got 3 bird feeders in the backyard and a hummingbird feeder as well. And I, if you were ever here every morning and I'm having my coffee, I'm whistling to, I've learned their language. I've got a couple birds that we have a conversation every morning. I'm not sure what they're saying, and they put up with me, but a couple of them will respond. We go back and forth, much to my neighbor's complaint.
Excellent.
I'm offering one more little thing, if I may. I've been trying to, and I've had to explain this several times, when people start writing me and telling me how birds are beautiful and necessary to the nature and all this. And I appreciate all of that, and I know it. I love birds. Don't get me wrong. I've been trying to create this series of poems that involve a perspective from someone who's going crazy by a particular thing. And birds seemed like a good choice because they're so innocent. And I thought only a very warped person could find a reason to not like them. So it was a struggle just to think of all the things that are bad about birds or why someone would find them so revolting. But that was what I was trying to do. And I've been trying to do that with a couple of other poems, like grass growing, ants. And today I thought of one that just involves walls, how there's walls that are everywhere. And, you know, birds were just, something, they're so innocent and neat, but then the idea that someone could just be derided by them struck me as a kind of funny, odd thing, and it would have to be someone who's really crazy enough to want to crush wings. That was what my goal was, to portray someone who's just really nuts. It's not real, though. Trust me, it's not real.
Excellent. Thank you, Bill. John, how about you?
Well, I like that poem on a lot of levels, serious ones and not so serious ones. Especially, I got a giggle out of that one line about the statues. I knew what he was referring to there. I use a lot of statues in my poetry because I write about squares a lot and marble courtyards and so forth. And birds aren't friends of statues. But seriously, I think people tend in this country, animals get treated better than most poor people in some senses. And it was refreshing for me to hear a poem that was degrading an animal instead of praising it higher than the angels, like I hear so much of. That's what I like the best about this. I thought he was serious. I thought he really, you know, hate these creatures who fly. I like the allusion to Poe, of course, the raven. You know, he didn't mention the raven specifically, but I knew he was. That's what he was hinting at. I mean, Poe probably, if he heard that poem, would get very nervous and leave the room. Because, you know, the raven, it's a poem about going mad slowly. And at the end, he's prostrated on the floor, looking at the raven and the bust of Atlas, where the raven's perched, and it's a descent into madness, and the raven's the means to that madness. So you can kind of like encapsulate every line in that poem and tie it together with Poe's The Raven and see a lot of similarities. The raven's not a friend, and it's not something that Poe's looking up to in that great poem of 1840. So I think it was a great poem. I was laughing, and half the time I was, the other allusion to my favorite director of movies, Alfred Hitchcock, the birds in that movie, they are violent, and they're a threat to all humanity from the heavens. And there's one line in that movie where the lady says, "Do you know how many birds there are in the world? It would be impossible to eliminate them if they should turn on us." It was a great poem. It was a great poem. It was interesting, too. And it wasn't an anticlimax or a dim line in the whole thing.
Excellent. Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
Scott, how about you?
Thank you. Thank you, too, John.
Oh, you are.
Yeah, I enjoyed a number of things about it. One thing, it's very rhythmic. It does have the internal rhyme stuff going on as well that creates some rhythm in it. Where they're taking to flight is insulting slight to others. Others incapable of joining amid the air. Those birds, the damnable birds, with their biting beaks, clawed feet, feathery skins that spurs. There's a very good rhythmic right going on here. I also love what you said, Bill, about the idea that you kind of stepped outside of, this isn't you writing, that you are writing with a speaker that is not you, And so I really enjoyed listening to somebody else say that, because literally that is how I write almost all the time. Is that
I want to tag along with what you said there, because it resonates so loudly with me, and it reminds me of when I was very young, and I'm not anymore, but when I was, I think back about it now and thought all that stuff was so good. I started writing as a teenager, and I was so proud of it. When I look back at it now, I realize how poor it was, because so often I was writing only about things that I felt, and woe is me, love, woe is the love that I have, and no one really understands me. I'm all alone, and I don't know what to do. What's going on with you? I mean, this really pitiful stuff is all about me, me, me. And then when I got older and gets bored of thinking about things that involve me, because I am a boring kind of guy, what I found was really more interesting was trying to approach something from another's point of view, or pretend that I was someone else responding to something. And I think I will tell writers, young writers especially, just get out of your own head. I know we write sometimes for cathartic purposes, but I'll tell people
absolutely.
That your art will elevate when you get out of your own mind and start looking at things outside of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I believe your best writing will be when you disconnect it. Oftentimes when you disconnect it from your own life and you allow yourself to go beyond just your experiences, instead envision the world around you and how others might feel and those kinds of things. Overall, though, Bill, I really did like the poem. It's a good thing. There's a lot of really cool lines in it. I could picture the bird flying into the well-cleaned glass window. There's just some really good things in it. So, anyways, great job.
I totally agree with that. Bill, this hits on the notes of being both cynical and satirical in nature. It plays well off of each other. It makes fun of us for being overly broad in our thoughts to birds, and also overly broad in how we depict. So it works on both levels, pitting the cynics and the satire as a fold into itself. So on that note, it worked very well.
Nice.
All right, Gene.
Nice.
It's coming to you.
Nice comment, Rex. And listen, please don't ask me to comment on anybody. We've only accomplished four poems in an hour, and there's just no way we can go at that pace because there's 20 people that are there waiting to be heard tonight. So I will leave written comments. So if anybody's looking, that's where to find them. Hey, Frank, how are you tonight? Rex, can I get you to read the next one by Cedar Chapman, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
Recession is Served Blood Rare by Cedar Chapman. Excel spreadsheets are dripping in red and hanging on the cold Damascus steel of Bill Gates' meat hooks. Chateaubriand dinners have morphed into awful beef tripe gutted from dead colleagues lying in pig pen cubicles, their body parts scattered in a pit of cannibal frenzy. We graciously swallow all the fat scraps they toss our way, so long as we're not the next ones in line to feel an iron slug embedded in our medulla oblongata. Friends smile and pat my back, holding a sticky note marked with a butcher's stamp. I follow the blood-filled stench to the boardroom slaughterhouse. My boss dangles his prairie oysters back and forth in my face like a shriveled tea bag dripping its last drops. He tries to hypnotize me into signing my own death certificate to avoid sharing Earl Grey with lawyers in my afterlife. I flash in my much bigger oysters and strut out their giant glass doors. I'll take my chance in the wild, wild west while I'm waiting for my next ride. I'll take my kids to Six Flags, tuck them to bed every night, then overdose on soft ice cream and single malt scotch until the next full moon shines on my pillow again. And boom.
Great read. Great read.
Scott, why don't we start with you, please?
Yeah, that's pretty hilarious in a lot of ways. I really enjoyed the last two stanzas. My boss dangles his prairie oysters back and forth in my face like a shriveled tea bag dripping its last drops, and goes on to the last stanza where I feel like he's kind of walking out of this situation that is not working out for him. Let's put it that way. But anyways, I enjoyed the whole imagery created here. Very well done. I've read some other stuff of Cedar's before. He is very talented as far as creating images, and the metaphors and the allusions are also oftentimes worth looking them up at times if you don't understand them, because they aren't misplaced allusions. They actually fit with meaning. So anyways, very good job on this, Cedar.
Nice. Thank you very much, Scott. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, I just love Cedar's writing. And, you know, this is such a deep piece, you know, but hilarious, but, you know, deep at the same time, because he addresses, you know, the kind of, you know, the irony of the whole situation. And, you know, Scott, I just love that last part. The last stanza, you know, he really talks about all the this is going on. And then at the end, while I'm waiting for my ride, I'll take my kids to Six Flags, tuck them in at night, then overdose on soft ice cream. And then, you know, so I just love how he finished out the whole write. Excellent rewrite here, and wonderfully done.
Thank you, Naomi. John, how about you?
Well, it reminded me of the writings of D.H. Lawrence, actually, in a lot of ways. I like the elevated language and the words. And I got a kick out of the liquor line there. There's a movie they made, I think it was 69, called Born to Be Wild was the soundtrack to it. It was, it was early Jack Nicholson, and every time he woke up in a prison, and he's in the dawning light, and he drinks some liquor to get going every morning, and he kind of makes the emotions of a chicken, and he says, "Here's to D.H. Lawrence." That came into my mind as he was reciting the poem. It was kind of he talks about the West, right? And I just thought of liquor and sand and some saloons, actually, to be honest. It's the kind of poem that I think could affect different people in different ways. And that's the strongest point about it, I think. It was hard to pigeonhole, and I like that about it.
Excellent. And the movie was Easy Rider.
That's right, sir, yes.
And Bill, how about you?
Yeah, I found it very unsettling, actually, like I could never really get my footing. And I think that was fully intentional by this writer because he switches so fast. And there's this moodiness throughout this write, which is kind of compelling. But one of my points is that, in one minute he's talking about the pig pen cubicles, and then there was this reference to, like, some kind of fine French dining. And then you go at the end, when it goes to this image of kids at Six Flags, which seems so sweet and sentimental, and then he follows it with an overdose of ice cream. So it's this switching of tone between one scene and then taking it to the next. So for me, I found it a little unsettling, and I think that's something he was going for, actually. And I would say mission accomplished.
Oh, absolutely. It's a hard look within the duality of the machine and whether one actually wants to play that game or actually spend a little bit more time with their families as opposed to actually walking that thin red line. So did a great job with that, Cedar. Thank you very much. And Jean?
Okie dokie. Well, the next one I'm going to put up is called Death by Dishonor, and that's by Stelina. So let me drop it in the room and hit the button because we have an audio. There we go.
I cometh to thee, ere God, mine own beloved, with his blessing. For on the morrow, at daybreak, upon the misty heath, two men wilt walk as the mossy sod, but only one wilt triumph. As thee face thy fiendish foe, who it did dare to slur mine integrity. Yet whither wouldst mine honour beest, if to be true thou art no longer near? So wouldst all life falleth hence, as if floating on a wayward ocean.
Fear not such sooth by this blackguard's boast of bane, for that coxcomb shall taste mine exuriant blade cometh morn. A pox be is cursed upon yon scoundrel, his strumpet therewith. Verily, mine sweet, thy noble virtue shalt be'est avenged in blood. I shalt smite those who is speaketh thy name mid scurvy tone. Did let haste the dawn, yon thy may returneth beside thee triumphant.
To behold thy sweet face, mine own love, is heavenly to bear, as with dove-like caresses I trace, to abide within my memory. Thine eyes shine with the beauty of a flush new morn, of soft blue solace in these peradventure our final somber moments. Thy lips gushed of sweetened honey, dripping from the comb, which I verily savor with relish at each divine embrace.
Yea, thy tender embrace shalt meeteth mine with comforting buss, as I billow affection upon thy soothing appetent shores. Let us dance this night as one, neath veil of yonder moon, to revel midst romance, till first rush of light paints breaketh of day. Be'st not afeard, mine goodly wife, for naught shalt cleave us asunder. The moment of reckoning draws nigh, midst quickened plight.
Cometh, did lie upon mine bosom, so can I hold thee close, as thee sip from the rosebuds which blossom at thy touch. Ere the morn breaks and doth rend thee from mine arms, forswear with me in sweet surrender, I will give us myself to thee, mine whole self, so if it be true at which hour thee depart this life, so wilt I fain follow with thee unto the gates of eternity.
Prithee, hearken my vow, for I shalt vanquish this varlet. My steed grows impatient to thence race yonder sunrise. Our love shalt ne'er wane, bit hereunto or thence. Should mine sword meet defeat, ne'er shed thy tears, beloved. Then taketh not thy life, dear wife, lest trespass damnation, for one day thy heart shall join mine, twixt angels evermore.
Wow. Great reads, Stelina and Arcana. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Naomi, why don't we start with you?
I just have to say, you know, what a good, great team they make, Stelina and Arcana, together when they, you know, when they do a collab like this, a poem. I just love, you know, the language used, you know, that old English, I cometh to thee, ere God, wilt waketh the mossy sod. I can't say I understood, you know, you know, some of it, but you know what an amazing tale told, you know, of a man departing to this, you know, to do this, of course, to duel, you know, to fight this other person, and you know, saying an adieu to his loved one. So I think the two voices together just blended so well, and you know, just a wonderful write. You know, I saw in a comment somebody said tour de force, and I think that's, you know, a delicious way, you know, a great way, a tour de force that they managed to pull off here. Magnificent poem for sure.
Excellent. Thank you, Naomi. And John, how about you?
Oh, it was great. Absolutely great. I think that was my favorite of the night so far. I mean, the dour reciting of it from that couple really emphasized and elucidated the difference between darkness and light, between the sufferings of this life and the bliss of the next. I think they encapsulated that wonderfully in the verse they were reciting. When they began, It sounded like an Emily Dickinson poem in a lot of ways. I thought of Sylvia Plath, of course, the great American poet who took her own life. Because it was darkly written, recited, and there was a conveyance of a darkness of emotion and mental state and mood, the mood. But then there was the kind of like references to Elizabeth Barrett Browning's Sonnet to the Portuguese, where she speaks about love in the next life in a romantic fashion, in a romantic way. And I could really identify with that poem in a lot of ways because I wrote an entire volume myself called Eternal Verse that it was all about lovers in heaven. And so that, I just loved it. It's right down my alley for sure. You know, eternal love between a man and a woman in paradise that goes on forever is something that even the Catholic Church hasn't defined. It's a possibility still. We don't know. I hope it's true, certainly for some couples. And I love the poem in all its aspects. I thought it was great. And you guys really have a great show going here. I wish I would have come across you sooner. It's much more interesting than listening to C-SPAN or hearing about the Yankees.
Excellent. Thank you, John. How about you?
No, I really enjoyed this. I mean, it pulls you along all the way through it. It's very compelling, but I really love the way that it ends because, to me, kind of at the end, it's like the dagger that makes it. And so that last stanza, prithee hearken my vow, for I shall vanquish this varlet. My steed grows impatient to thence waste yonder sunrise. Our love shall ne'er wane, be it hereunto or thence. Should mine sword meet defeat, ne'er shed thy tears, beloved. Then taketh not thy life, dear wife, lest trespass damnation. For one day thy heart shall join mine twixt angels evermore. Basically saying, should I not win this battle, do not take your life like people of olden days might do in their tragic ways of Shakespearean, you know, tales and stuff, because you may meet damnation yourself, but instead wait for me as I will join you on the other side. I thought that was bravo, an amazing ending to a really well-written poem.
Excellent. Thank you, Scott. And Bill, how about you?
Yes, I just want to say first that Stelina and Arcana and Moore, I message with them often and have gotten to know them, and incredibly talented and wonderful people. But this is the first time I've been able to put a voice to the words before, and I'm so happy for that. This is an amazing Victorian era type writing. And I'm not surprised at how good it is because I've read other works by Stelina and Arcana, and I think they're probably among the very best of those on the All Poetry platform. And I thought this was the romanticism and intimacy that came across. It was excellent. But here's another thing that it reminded me of, and you'd have to know the Moody Blues to maybe get this reference. The Moody Blues used to sing a song called Nights in White Satin, and in the long version of that song, they stop singing for a moment, and they start reciting verse. And the tone of that reading just now took me all the way back to the Moody Blues poem that's in the middle of Nights in White Satin. And if anyone listens to that song and comes across that verse and listens to it, they'll know exactly what I mean. You know, the other fascinating thing about this is it shows the incredible difference that comes from reading something with your own eyes versus listening to someone else. Because just reading the words, it seems so romantic and glorious, all that colorful Victorian language.
Mm-hmm.
But the reading with that music in the background and just the nature of their voices, it sounded like something ominous and unsettling was coming. But it was anything but ominous. So it was a little strange to me to hear the tone that was coming across in the reading, I mean, which was fine, but it just seemed at odds with the beauty of the writing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a bit of a reality that walks within this piece. They understand that which is coming and also understand the thought of offering up that Romeo-Juliet angle of giving up one's life when the other one goes, but also the beg in the bottom of that last stanza, do not relinquish your vows unto God and take your own life, for then we might not meet on the other side. So the reality is born unto that first stanza itself, where it says, I come to thee, dear God,
right,
my own beloved, with his blessing. So it's in that start and finish. And I like the thought you brought the Moody Blues, Nice and White Satin, and it also hit on another one, Lucky Man from Emerson, Lake and Palmer back in 1970, very much the same tone. I will gladly die here if I must, but it is thine honor that I offer up in the first place to avenge or at least put my mark on it. And the fact that they dropped in a proper language and even included varlet and blackguard was a nice touch, as well as some other little tidbits of flavor rolled through the whole thing. So it was a wonderful piece, Selena and Arcana. Thank you very much. Jean, how about you?
Okie dokie. Well, next piece I have to put up is called Time Stands Still by Scott Sharp. I think he's around. Maybe he'll read it for us. That'd be awesome. Whenever you're ready, Scott.
All right. Go ahead and get that. All right, Time Stands Still by some guy named S. Sharp. There was a place beyond the wind, over the mountains and under the sea, across the expanses of eternity, where everything is frozen still. There's Einstein scratching numbers on a chalkboard in the darkest regions of space. The numbers dance along a timeline. Fred Astaire spinning Ginger Rogers, a spiral galaxy on the great stage of life. A plane crashes into a wavering tower. Fiery bodies throw themselves to the ground. A second plane plunges into a second tower. The world watches. Time stands still. The president stands in Berlin. He forcibly, adamantly urges, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Stones fall into the streets. People gather them like gold coins. The Enola Gay flies above pristine waters along the sun-smacked Mariana Islands, above the flag on Iwo Jima, delivering a new era of hatred as old as man himself. A motorcade travels through the streets of Dallas. Dealey Plaza is alive. Bullets wave to the lively crowd. Kennedy will not survive. A cross is erected. A man is nailed to it, both hand and foot. Thorns pressed into his skull bleed throughout our history. I kneel. I pray for him, for you, for us. Eternity stands still, but like time, I must continue on. End poem.
Great read there, Scott. Thank you very much. And Bill, why don't we start with you, please?
Yes, I am. I'm very impressed with the historical references that are included in this, because they're each like little, what do they call them, Easter eggs. But, the other thing I often worry about stuff like this is, will it stand the test of time? I mean, like, here we are, and right now, you know, we understand any reference to Dealey Plaza and the lively crowd and the motorcade in Dallas, and we know exactly what that means. The Berlin Wall falling down and people gathering up bricks or stones like gold coins. I understand these historical references. I often wonder about the generations behind me, or maybe I should say generations ahead of me. I'm talking about my grandchildren. And when they become adults, will they understand all of these references? It's not an issue right now for what is here. It just makes me remember a time that I wrote this thing that included references to Carl Malden, who I thought was an amazing performer. But today, I doubt very much many people, except those around my age or older, would remember who Carl Malden is. So, you know, this is one of the tricky things about including some of these reference points in poetry sometimes. If you're thinking about will it always stand the test of time? Or if you're writing for, I dare to say there's some people who don't know about the Mariana Isles or the Enola Gay. The flag was on Mount Suribachi, actually. And I liked how it went from, all these historical references with the allusions to the consequences of those tragic events. Unless the Berlin Wall falling down wasn't so much a tragedy, but how Scott went from these major historical events and then brought it all, synthesized it all down to a cross being erected and Christ's sacrifice, and building it up to that point is like all these things that happen with these historic events, as if to say it's all building up to the most major one of all. You'll notice that in that last stanza, it suddenly shifts from what, in all the other references, it's talking about consequences that involve other people, like the people that are gathering up stones like coins after the wall, or how the flag is raised after the Enola Gay. So my point is, it's not until the final stanza that it suddenly shifts from the consequences of what other people do until this final thing that the consequence this time is the writer in first person saying, I kneel, I pray for him, I pray for you, I pray for us.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of very grabbing kind of summation. Great job, Scott.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Bill. And Naomi, how about you?
Yes. This is just outstanding, Scott. My gracious, what a wonderful write. I just love how you go through all this, these historical moments, you know, that mark our time, and of course, you know, I wasn't around for some of them, but you know, not for the crucifixion, that's for sure. But just a wonderful, powerful poem, and so emotional too. It just like caught me in the gut. There's something about it. I just love how your beginning, how you started out, the juxtaposition of Einstein, in the darkness, as he's scribbling down the formula for the nuclear bomb, when you eject, and then along a timeline, and then you go into Fred Astaire spinning Ginger Rogers, A Spiral Galaxy on the Great Stage of Life. I love that. You right away there, you put the light against the darkness there right away. And all through. Wow, what an amazing write this is. Powerful and thought-provoking, very emotional, and so worthy of a front page pick, Scott. So bravo. Amazing, right?
Nice.
Thank you, Naomi.
And John, how about you?
Yeah, I don't know if anybody noticed, but that was so Kerouac in its structure anyway. I can say it reminded me a lot of On the Road, his most famous work, which he wrote in only 2 weeks on speed. And but no, Scott, this was a very wonderful thing to hear. You're good at reciting poetry, which is in itself an art. I'm not very good at reciting my own poetry, but the one passage that caught me the most was when you said praying for Christ. The first, I'm a Catholic and a very devout one. I rarely ever heard about, we all know he prayed for us, and praying for him is a really turning the tables kind of between humanity and Christianity and the concept of the divinity. Praying for the divinity, I kind of felt guilty when I heard that line because I guess I should have prayed for him more. Even if I did once, I can't recall. It was just a stunning line. It was a stunning line, and it cut right through a lot of things. It was a rich, colorful poem, and the whole landscape you painted with words was excellent. It was very impressionistic, and I thought it was very effective.
Excellent. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Scott, I got to tell you, this reminded me of a song that came out 2 years ago from Bob Dylan called 17 Minutes, A Murder Most Foul, which ran through the gamut of Kennedy's life on Dealey Plaza. This kind of walks in the same vein, but you roll with it in singular moments in history. Einstein in the early 10s and 20s, figuring everything out, and then the thought of walking with the towers, the fall of the Berlin Wall, the flight of the Enola Gay, and then again, you hit on Dallas in that near back on the end of it, and then you hit on the cross erected. These are all singular, supreme moments, definitive in nature, and you hit on that note. I kneel, I pray for him, for you, for us. Eternity stands still, but like time, I must continue on. There is a kind of almost a quintessential note of repetition. We're not remembering that which has come before because we're not teaching history properly. Therefore, we are doomed to repetition notes of all that you brought in with this, from recent down through the ages, which starts with the cross and him nailed to it. So it is that idea of
we need to be taught more resolutely on the history of that which has occurred, so we don't fall prey to actually repeating that history. So I did a great job of that.
Excellent point.
Well, thank you, guys. Yeah, I would just say that, you know, my whole goal, if somebody read this, is that if for one moment time stood still while they thought of these different things, you know? So that's kind of the goal of the poem, is that time stands still for you as you read it for just a moment. So
you did just that, Scott. Thank you.
Yes.
And Gene?
Okay. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is for Naomi to read. So, Naomi, if you would be so kind, I would appreciate it.
Hey, did you get
the lawyer?
Did you get?
I
have a
I
sound.
Have, so
sound.
I got it.
It might be a little.
Here we go.
It might be a little loud.
Well, we'll see.
I tasted the soft skin at your mouth, plunged deep into your salted breath to moan as a seagull shivering on a stormy sea. The seagull that a thunderstorm rips from the sky. I rode your waves, singing with the sirens, weeping in the arms of drowning sailors, letting myself drift upon your rugged, raging tides, building myself a fortress on your golden beach. And as the famished edges of your frothing surf feasted on my fallen castle wall, there I lie, shattered, naked on your shore, sand seeping between my fingertips, grinding the last few pebble grains stuck in my teeth, gritty on my tongue, choking on the bitterness you left crammed between my aching chest bones. Still, here I stand, yet again, in your salted breath. 1 year older, 1 year wiser, 1 year stronger, ready to dive once more into your murky depths. All while paddling to keep my head above water.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And I see you wrote to the Buddha, quote, no matter how hard the past, you can always begin again. And Scott, why don't we start with you, please?
I love this, Naomi. Very passionate, right? Love the read. I love many of the images that you create here. Like I say, just a couple that kind of stuck out, plunge deep into your salted breath to moan as a seagull shivering on a stormy sea. Love the image that that's creating. And I love the way that you rose up in your reading of it to a crescendo and then kind of brought it back down again and everything. Really love the passion of the read and stuff. So overall, it's just a really good write.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott. And John, how about you?
I like the piano music. No, that's just a joke. No, really. It was a very good poem, and it had a lot of longing in it. You can hear the longing. The amorous longing of it was striking to me. It was beautifully worded. You know, that's all I have to say about it. Very good piece.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Bill, how about you?
Yeah, I was just sitting here kind of embarrassed, wondering, should I be wearing pants? And I'm kidding, of course. But Naomi, didn't I talk to you once on one of those 1-900 number lines? No, I think you missed your calling because it was so arousing. It was really arousing. And I'm sorry, I'm a very lonely man.
This is getting explicit.
Okay. Yes, the you know, but I really am impressed because I'm not. You've done something that I'm just terrible at doing, and I have the worst time with it. And I don't think I'm alone. But how you've been able to capture all of this sensuality and sexuality without getting crass or going too far that it would make, you know, some of the hypersensitive people start wanting to fall on their knees and with their rosary beads. Yeah, I think you walked an incredible line with this. And I must say, despite all the references to the shore and the surf, sex on the beach is never as fun as people make it sound, because sand goes in places that you'd never want it to go, and it just detracts from everything. So I realize the subject of this poem, there's things going on, you know, on the shore, but don't be mistaken, folks. It's not as fun as you might think.
A little abrasive,
actually.
That would be.
Actually, this is a poem that wasn't erotic at all. It was just talking about the year gone by. Wow, I make even poems that I'm not supposed to make erotic.
Why didn't my mind? Are you telling me my mind just went somewhere it wasn't supposed to go? Oh, it's about time. Now I get it. I'm sorry. I got to think about this more.
It does kind of walk that way. That
you just put it in a whole new context for me.
It does walk that way in places with the intonations you offer up. I taste the soft skin at your mouth, plunge deep into your salted breath. The offering right there is sensual in nature. I rode your waves singing with the sirens, weeping in the arms of drowning sails. There's a note of eroticism within that too. The thought of sand seeping between my fingertips drops into that loss, a sense of loneliness, and grinding the last few pebble grains and then cramp between my aching chest bones. Again, that heaviness of loss. And it, like you said, it does walk that note of time. But there's also a note of sensuality, as if bidding a lover adieu, because you offer up 1 year older, 1 year wiser, 1 year stronger, and that willingness to get back up again after having fallen down, so to speak. And the thought of, while keep paddling to keep my head above water, hits on that the nature of keeping one's sanity. So it does walk both ends. No,
so, well, yeah, I guess I'm a very sensual person.
The drought is over in more ways than one.
Naomi, I think I can hear your voice every night before I went to bed.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone. Come back to you, Jean.
Okay, well, let me see. Now, the next piece I'm going to put up is called In the Shadows by Robert M. So let me put that up, and let me get that audio. Here we go.
In the shadows I have seen your pain, felt your deep disdain, but my friend, don't let the haters get you down there. All consumed in sin, poison from within. Just know that cowards die a coward's death. Where can you run when the world is against you? What can you do when your mind now resents you? What is your fate when the heavens now exempt you? Shadows, friend, where can you run when the world is against you? What can you do when your mind now resents you? What is your fate when the heavens now exempt you? Meet me in the shadows, friend. Take this blister hand so you understand. You and I are meant to share a shadow fate. I know your darker side, all that you would hide.
Great read there, Robert. Thank you very much for the sound file. We very much appreciate it. And Bill, why don't we start with you?
I was struck by how modern and commercial this sounded. When I say modern and commercial, that I just mean that it's timely, and it certainly bodes well with what is currently popular on the radio, and that's even though I'm of a certain generation that keeps listening to the old stuff over and over again. Someone mentioned Dylan earlier. I'm still listening to Highway 61 Revisited. Here it is, you know, 45 years later. And so I have trouble sometimes understanding some of the current stuff because my ears just aren't tweaked for it. And when I don't understand what I'm hearing, I go to one of my kids because I know I can tell them, I know that I'm hearing something with emphasis that has some kind of meaning, and the utterances sound like words, but please tell me what I'm hearing. And so my kids interpret it for me. And I could make out quite a bit of it in the it's a song. It's a very commercial and modern song that is probably even better than some of the crap on the radio today. But it's a whole other art form to go from words on a page to making it something lively that tickles your ear. So congratulations on pulling that off. Something about the music, being able to take words from a flat page and bring them to life in music and song, which triggers whole other areas of the brain. So that is very commendable. You know, it's music. It's music. That's my question.
Thank you, Bill. Naomi, how about you?
Oh, wow. You know, I just totally jammed to this whole thing. Oh, my gracious, that's the first time I heard Robert sing. Oh, wow, what a voice. Like, I mean, this is just awesome. Where can you run when the world is against you? What can you do when your mind now resents you? What is your fate when the heaven now exempts you? And meet me in the shadows, friend. I just love this, the whole thing. Wow. Bravo, Robert. I know he's such excellent when it comes to dark rites. And, you know, to put it to a beat like that and to wrap it out, just awesome, awesome, awesome. I really, really enjoyed this.
Absolutely. Thank you, Naomi. Scott, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. I think this is really well done and everything. There is definitely an audience for this. You know, as I've grown older and everything else, you know, I even for a long time while I was raising my kids kind of ventured away from the music that I was used to listening to, which would be like rock, like Led Zeppelin, you know, advancing into the 80s and 90s of Metallica, things like that. So I could totally relate to this, right? You know, but for a long time, I tried to make sure I personally wasn't listening to any of that, anywhere near my children. So, and now I'm back to actually listening to all the music I enjoyed and everything else. So, you know, like I say, which were things like Metallica and things like that. So, like I say, I can totally relate to this, right? And I would just say that personally, I think this is really well done. And I absolutely believe that marketed correctly, that this is a song that there are a lot of kids out there that would love this song. So, with that being said, very well done writing-wise on this, Robert.
Oh, excellent. Thank you very much there, Scott. John, how about you?
It conveyed to me the feeling and the sights and the atmosphere of like a place like South Chicago or East Harlem or, you know, a lot of the northern ghettos in the United States where life is hard and the poor are oppressed by many factors and are disadvantaged. And there's a lot of danger in the air. I think the music and the words conveyed a sense of prescient danger. You know, it was hard to hear for me because, you know, I live in New York City, fortunately a decent area of it, but I know the city well, and I've been in those neighborhoods. And, you know, when you're walking around in those neighborhoods where people are sometimes go to bed hungry, and there's a lot of drug use, and there's a lot of abuse between people. The darkness gets thick, really gets thick, and in more ways than one. And I think this poem expressed a lot of those things that I just spoke about.
Yeah, there's a gritty kind of quality to it, isn't there?
Yeah. Yes, gritty is a good word, yeah.
Thank you, everyone. You see, it's, he chose a few words to stand out bold. So I think it gives you a little reference to part of it. Hey, they are death. Take one or take I. So in the intonation of when you walk in the darkness, you walk hand in hand with the devil, and that is the reference point. And it comes across that, like, take this blistered hand so you understand. You and I are meant to share a shadowed face. And
that is
the back end of giving you, they think they're hot. Well, I would know such things. Come now,
I will show
you fire. And then that nice intonation of a scratch laugh at the back end really seals it. So, well done, Pete Robert. Well done, Pete Robert. Thank you very much. All right, Gene.
Okay, I'm going to try and get two done. It's asking a lot at 10 minutes till, but That's what I'd like to do. So I'm going to put this next piece up. It's called The Tick Tock by Poetic Picasso. And I have an audio for that one as well. Let me just find the button. Here we go.
A dreaded sound of tick-tock from the last vintage clock ticks behind the hollow walls beneath the midnight moon. A harrowing ring heard suddenly, resounding into an eerie echo, so loud and haunting in nature by a daunting abandoned house. This is no place of fantasy. The horrid clock that I mention is no ordinary contrivance, but 'tis the evil keeper of time. Many unknown hidden secrets and untold truths remain silent within the old passing of time, the voices of the trapped souls. A thousand images rock my mind as I listen to their drowning cries. When the parallel world of terror awakens the once dormant spirits. I sweat of every minute past as the tick-tock of the giant clock then intensifies into a madness reverberating, a loud clang of steel. The clang has deafened my ears and my head rings from within whilst I try to escape the clock, but I cannot escape. It's ticking. I drop to my floor covering my ears as the noise does not seem to stop, but I sense that I shall be free at last. This is a terrible dream conceived. Then I realize I am strapped tight in a straitjacket of an asylum, all alone to face the darkness I fear with the ringing of the clock. I hear the voices discomposing me by the reality of an unbearable whore whose name is attached to the sound bursting my eyes from their sockets. No!
Wow.
Great read, Frank. Thank you
Someone
very much
like-
for that. Thank you for the sound, Frank. It's very much appreciated. John, why don't we start with you?
Well, now I know what Boris Karloff on LSD would sound like. Yeah, as soon as it started, I had visions of flight deck and padded cells and, you know, restrainers and, you know, doctors with Thorazine and needles coming towards you. I'd imagine, you know, it was kind of a mockery maybe on madness. I don't know. I'm just guessing here. It sounded that way. I'm sure, you know, you can't take yourself too seriously when you write a poem like that. And that's a good thing. You know, if it was all from the heart and mind, I would call a doctor soon, you know. It was good. It was entertaining. I liked it.
Thank you, John. Naomi, how about you?
Naomi dropped first.
Oh, okay. Scott?
Yeah, I really liked this, actually. Well, I was at first just totally taken back because, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen Frank write anything but those really compelling romantic writes. And so for a few, it took me a second to kind of like get into the flow of it. Like, wait a second, this isn't Frank, is it? And then, you know, as it went along, it was like, this is really good. It's just like all his other rides, but it's just on a different topic and stuff. And what I mean by that is very detailed, you know, great language usage, all of those kinds of things. And I loved when he finally got down to the idea of the asylum and all of that. And I just, you know, the ending was compelling and powerful. So very well done, Frank.
Thank you. I think there was also a note to the telltale heart with the tick-tock as opposed to the beating of the heart itself. So, nicely done, Frank. Gene, we're coming back to you for that last one. We're going to squeeze it in.
Thanks, sir. Appreciate it. Okay, the last one I'm going to put up is by Arcana Amor. So let me set that up and play that audio for everybody. And here we go.
Mystical marriage to midnight magic, we dance the darkness in sanguine serenity. Our eternal embrace shall ne'er cleave asunder as we waltz through veils of languorous sighs. Your pale perfection reflects the moonlight as stars blaze brightly within your eyes. You capture my stare with enticing spells that demands be sated in prisms of pleasure. Just you and I, my elegant enchantress, we entwine in timeless trysts of passion, exploring each other with delicious devotion. Midst cascading cloaks of nocturnal rapture, our tongues taste desire in wanton abandon as they caress our crevices of pallid flesh. In writhing crescendos engulfed in ecstasy, we make love in the satin embrace of night. This immortal flame that burns between us shall endure the temporal fabric of time. Though centuries pass by like changing seasons, the connection we share shall never fade. Like blood, we bleed through veins of shadows, sharing our kisses midst sensual storms that drain the hearts of beating nectar, feasting on forlorn fates with fervor. With eager endeavor we melt together, side by side we slumber from break of dawn, patiently awaiting the breath of twilight. For our undying obsession to arise as one.
Great read, Arcana. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Scott, this is probably what you were expecting from Frank.
I know we have limited time, so I'm going to go quickly. I love the ending. The last line does it again, just like the last one with their ending together for our undying obsession to rise as one. I just feel like at the end, he just brought it all together. It was really well done all the way through, but certainly the ending, you know, wraps it up really well.
Excellent. Thank you. And Bill, how about you?
Yeah, again, Arcana proves for me each time just how incredibly talented he is. And one of the things that caught me right off from the beginning is just this powerful use of alliteration throughout the entire piece, from the sanguine serenity, the delicious devotion, the pale perfection, engulfed in ecstasy. These techniques with alliteration just help it keep make like a little earworm where it kind of grows and pulls you in even further. And the longing and lustiness of it is awesome in itself, but I tend to focus sometimes just on structural elements because these are the things that are carrying the message, and I'm really impressed with his alliteration and this, it's a clear account. I mean, I appreciate obscurity, but sometimes someone can go a little too far in ambiguity. But there's not. This is easy to understand, and I like it at the end where it makes the, you know, yes, seasons do fade. Winter goes to spring, spring into summer, summer into fall. And as much as these seasons may fade, but our connection will not. I love the truth and beauty of that.
Excellent. Thank you, Bill. All right, Gene, we're coming to you since we're at the back end of things.
Okay. Well, I think we have like 7 carryovers, which is amazing because we had less than 20 on the board. But anyone who didn't hear their piece tonight, be sure to look at next Friday's piece because that's what I'm going to start out with. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank you, Scott. It was great to hear from you. Lex, as always, thanks for being my co-host. Bill, it was great to hear from you as well. Don, thanks for calling in.
Thank you for letting me.
And Naomi, thank you for calling in and spending most of the evening with us. Well,
99%
of it.
Naomi, you can call me anytime. I love
hearing
your voice, Naomi.
Thank you, Gene.
Thank you, guys. I had a fun time.
It was great hanging with everybody. Have a great weekend, and join us again. Let's see, after midnight we have Part Sinner, Part Saint with Aphasiana and Babbler. And tomorrow night we have, I think it's Bray Ice Smith with Bad Company. So check
Very
the board,
cool.
though, because I get a little confused here and there. I'm not going to lie.
Okay, Gene, have a great weekend. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye, guys.
Take care.
Night, all.
Yeah. Good night. Okay.